Intervju Radija Študent. Letos poleti je bil v Nikelsdorfu posnet pogovor z Martinom Kühnom, vodjo tam gostujoče zasedbe Angels Nine. No, danes pa se bo oglasil tudi pri nas v nekoliko manjši, a po svoje sorodni zasedbi All Included. Svojo ognjevito glasbo bodo igrali v Menzi pri Koritu, kjer so pred časom že gostovali in koder bo Martina letos še slišati. No, pred tem pa bomo predvajali kolaž delcev debate iz tistega sončnega julijskega popoldneva.
Break the ice. Let's start with the question that sort of popped into my mind yesterday, immediately after the concert. Mm-hmm. It's a bit broad question, but I mean, how is it to play such mind-blowing music?
Well, it usually goes by itself. You know, the mind-blowing thing, if it is there, we thought also yesterday it was quite a intense and good concert. So, and if you just concentrate and not be too concentrated on what can go wrong, because the tunes are quite, the arrangement are there, you know, so you're open for things can happen, and as we say, usually that doesn't mean a thing, but then the music will evolve by itself, you know. And the situation with the audience, of course. And yesterday it was quite a good score there.
What about, you know, the wider context of Angels? I mean, you are very explicit that you're coming from the topic of suffering, war, stuff like that. I mean, your first album was called by Every Woman is a Tree and referred to the woman of Iraq, and the Ljubljana one was by way of deception. Yeah. What is the story behind the injuries?
Well, the injury story is more a private one, yeah. Which was a situation in, how should I say, in myself maybe, and in my family, and so it was. At that specific moment, it was a quite harsh time at home, you know, and maybe only me recognized that in the family, in my family. So it was kind of a more, but then again, you know, you have sometimes it's kind of very private. And then, of course, with that title, and it came with that music, and then it opens up to other stuff. And, you know, I have, for example, some years ago, there was a woman after a concert in Berlin, and she said to me, "Yeah, I'm tired of your kind of, and your posting on Facebook and all this shit, and this you are a Schmerzmensch." Yeah. She mean you want to deal with suffering, but do you really experience it yourself? And it's a good question, because it's not about to use subjects to do songs about, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really felt here, and also things that has happened, which is in my life. I mean, case with a father, which was German, and he was into the war, the Second World War, and of course now we have the situation with all these mad things going on around us, and we are part of this, whether we want it or not. So, but again, it's not political music. It's not like that. It's just that it's what happens in our life. It affects us, and if in my way, it comes out in the titles, mm-hmm. but the music, it's on its own. This is my imagination. Maybe I'm fooling myself, but you see, so there's kind of two different. The titles is one thing, so it's not like a stamp of political ideas. No, it's not.
Well, but that is, you know, that is the first thing that what comes to mind when, especially for the first time, when I heard your the title "Every Woman is a Tree" and how it relates to the woman of Iraq, and it seemed a bit far-fetched, you know, there's some guy in Sweden writing about the suffering of Iraqi women. How do you respond to that, to yourself?
No, that's completely true, but the thing was, at that time I was very much involved in reading a lot and also had contact with people from Iraq. Mm-hmm. In Sweden, of course, there's a lot of refugees in Sweden from Iraq, so mm-hmm. tens of thousands.
Yeah.
And then a few years I also had a contact with an Iraqi woman who had to leave her kids in Iraq and search for asylum in Sweden, and it was not possible. Mm-hmm. And I met her, you know, and it's kind of a friend of mine now, more or less. And I had some kind of personal... And then I was to Lebanon and we were speaking to the people there. And I have to say this, maybe it's not... it also connected to the way of looking at women's right and the feminist movement, especially in Sweden, at what you have had and which was so... The strong picture was that, you know, there is a saying in Iraq now, since some years, if you get a kid, that the first question is not, is it a boy or a girl? Is it okay or is it deformed? Mm-hmm. Because there's so many deformed babies.
Due to white phosphorus?
Yeah, and also the nuclear devices that they have used. It's called either, it's kind of these enhanced uranium, depleted uranium, enhanced, it's kind of different opinions if it's really active radioactive material, which it seems to be, and it's also the white phosphorus. Anyways, and then you have it in the whole of Iraq, not only in Basra, also in Fallujah, also in Baghdad. And the thing is that all this development of these weapons in America, in Israel, in Europe, Russia and China, many, many, many places, kind of a global market, as you know. That happened at the same time as the women in our part of Europe had their liberation, you know, from the 60s, 70s. And now suddenly which maybe you could say again, far-fetched, but the women now suddenly in Iraq, because it's we are invading Israel, US, the US, the Europe, the EU, making it possible to do this invasion and make this complete horrendous suffering for the women, and especially for the kids and the fathers, of course. And that kind of had happened, but you didn't know it was kind of hidden, the weaponry about, you know, really pointing to these women, you know, giving birth is kind of the most, you know, deep-seated human thing you can think of. And then that's why we are here. Somebody gave birth to us, you know? Yeah, and you see? And when I started to think about that, and also, of course, heard about all this with the women in Iraq, with all the displaced persons, and so many, they lost their husband, and the children lost their fathers and the mothers to camps, or they were killed, or, you know, just mutilated. And it was kind of connected to us. That's the thing. Again, you know, it's not like, sure, you're right, I've never been to Iraq, I don't know. Surely, I don't have the first-hand experience.
So at the end of, you know, this your text that you're writing about how change can only lead to suffering, as it's hard to imagine its consequences, you finish off with the maybe slightly cryptic writings that... What is it?
About music.
Yeah, about music, that when the music is is being modified too intentionally, it slowly dies out, and that is what is happening to it in the so-called Western world. What do you mean with that?
No, I mean the situation for one, that you have music or muzak, you know, this produced thing which is everywhere in the shops, in the gym, at TVs and documentaries. It's all music. So I can see the kids, my kids and other kids. They are so used to have this kind of background, and when they are suddenly exposed to acoustic music or music which is live, some of them, of course, are very kind of happy, but many of them get, this is strange, because they used to wear their iPhone. And I think that the sensitivity with us is slowly dying out, because we are not reacting. It's really shit what's going on now. On the other hand, you have a lot of much more diverse music you can find, you know, also through this stupid site Spotify, but for example. But the good thing with that is you can really find from everywhere. But I don't really know where it will lead, but I have a feeling it's really... And it also makes worse for live music, because people are so used to recorded and these phones, MP3, that the quality of sound is getting worse, and we are getting used to that.
So you're seeing these changes mm-hmm. in listening, in perceiving music,
yeah, perceiving
in music. Yourself as well?
Yeah, probably now. Since I'm contradicting myself, but since I have a kind of a feeling I'm each day fighting that, always being angry, always talk to my sons, and they get very bored. Yeah, now he starts again, because I always want to look now. Does this kind of gorilla, does he listen to this classical guitar now out in the jungle? No, he doesn't. And then they laugh, you know, because it's so absurd. It's so absurd, the situation that you put music to everything. Mm. And you, I don't know, but I have this constant fight.
Mm. And these postulates of freedom, do they confine you from time to time?
It's a constant struggle. Yeah, but that's the kind of the contradiction of the whole thing, that you speak about free improvised music, you speak about having each other to have the freedom, and then the listener are coming, which doesn't know anything, and sometimes it can be too, in our small little musical world, it can be too many ways which are the easy way out. Mm. And you can still make some kind of a way of living from this. But before, when you were a musician, you really had to, and it still is, of course, in other musical gebits, yeah. You really had to know so much and practice. And this is some kind of, maybe it goes along with the modern art, that you are more like a concept and you have ideas and you can. I'm not saying this, I think both way are kind of can give, but this kind of freedom seeking music, in the end it's just it's nothing. And then again it goes with the pop culture stuff, that you're not really allowed to stay with one thing for months, for a year, for many years, and just small things, and then maybe you will come up and you will have people really being attentive to this. Mm-hmm. No, they think you are too slow, it has to be. So the pace of us doing things also have to be quick, and you have to do a career, or you have to think about that. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, also kills what could be there, you know. And unfortunately, it is to this scene as well.
So you noticed any changes in how much work you have to invest into you preserving as a musician? You have still as much time as, let's say, you had 10, 15 years ago?
I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I have no idea what I did. Actually, I had small kids at the time, but I was insisting doing these lousy gigs all the time, yeah, and maybe practicing a lot. Now I don't practice so much, but I have more time to do, with the tunes, and then until 2 years ago, I had some extra jobs. Mm-hmm. But now I don't have that, but it looks like I have to find another one again, because the money-wise, it's sehr problematisch.
Yeah, I mean, how...
So then the time, what I mean is, the time is kind of, which is also good, you know, it's good that you don't have immense that you can use, and then, so it's also good to have a kind of a pressure on you.
And the music you're playing, is that a purely personal thing that you do, or do you sort of rationalize it as something that has some social consequences, something that sort of is a good thing, not only a personal thing?
No, I believe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I mean. But what is a good thing? If, again, you know, you come to that, so you just have to go with it. It's very easy. It just comes, and if it doesn't come, it's nothing there. And usually I have the iPhone, like this voice memory. Yeah. So I put the lines, and then I listen back, and sometimes there is a song already. And some songs you have to put away because there was nothing. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you find them again, you know, you re-find them because of listening back. But socially, I don't know. I mean, yes, sure, it's good.
Mm. What about when you play it, let's say, when you play with Engels, or when you played the Hellstorm? It's at least, these are the two recent albums that are very emotional, very strong. And I wonder, when you channel this emotional music, does it drain you, or do you feel invigorated by everything that is going on?
No, it doesn't drain me. No. As you said, it's in the opposite. It kind of it gives.
Yeah.
It gives in, but sometimes, of course, you can be quite exhausted by. What is it? Maybe the thinking around is more the exhaustive thing than the actual music making. Maybe you feel both drained and alive, you know, or reset.
And what if you do not feel like it? If you do not feel like going through all these sort of emotional somersaults that happen while playing with this or that band?
Mm. Well, yesterday it was such a situation. Before the concert, I was feeling like, no. And I said to them, let's cancel the gig. No, really, let's cancel it. And I said, yeah. No, it was kind of a joke, but it was also true. Because I was, you know, this comes sometimes. Why are we doing this? Why am I doing this? And all these things for this, yeah. But then as soon as you start, and you really see it's people sitting there waiting. So of course you can't cancel the gig. No, you know. And then we start, and then it makes. But it's quite rare that it happens during a concert that I lost the touch.
Mm-hmm. And what is your starting point with the music you make? When was the moment that you sort of delved into the musical path that you've been taking for, let's say, the last 20 years? Or were there any sort of formational moments?
Yeah. There is specifically one. I was to a school, a music school, when I was 19, 20. With a more jazz-orientated, was playing the flute there, but I was not really. We had a good time the first year. Well, I had, because we were doing some rock music. I was singing in a rock band, and we were going around. But I couldn't really care about the jazz music, and all the other musicians were so super good. But it was the more the fusion era with Michael Brecker and all these guys, and I tried, but I couldn't figure out what it was and why. And anyway, so I stopped playing completely. But then I started to work in a hospital in Malmö. And then after 2-3 years, I started to play on the street, busking on the street with a tenor sax. And I started to learn some Swedish folk music a little bit, very, very on the surface, because we have a big, fantastic tradition in Sweden of different landscapes. Whereas I was just, you know, scrapping on the surface. But anyway, I was partly living on that, also the little money I got in the streets. It was in Stockholm, it was in Malmö, and then I also doing it quite a lot in Berlin and some other cities in Europe while traveling, and that the whole process of that playing was a way of surviving, actually, musically, and especially in my life. Of course, I didn't do anything. I was just walking around and had no goal with my life, nothing, and I was screwing that relationship or the other because I was always thinking there was something else better, you know, to find. That, you know, that kind of, I would say, the thing that we have learned to be, which also comes with this romanticism of the rock pop culture, that you're not supposed to be satisfied, you're not supposed to be a father and raise a family, because that was, and I was also thinking that was the worst thing that could ever happen, you know, when I was 20. And now I really regret it because I'm such an old father now. I would like to have kids before, but anyway, that's how it was, you know. At least happy that it changed. And the music was always there, and the playing on the street was the turning point, because I kept it. I didn't play with anyone for years, you know. And then it was another one when I came to Stockholm in 92. I was in a 1 week course with, there I met Mats Gustafsson for the first time, and a piano player called Anne Forsén. And then they had a course with free improvised music, and then I was hooked. But also because at that time I could almost not play, so it was no. But so that music is also good in that sense, because you can come very easily. That's why children can do this music. You can do music sound directly, and you can find how to start, to stop, and to listen to everything instead of. And then, of course, you should learn an instrument as well. But you can do both. That's why that's the most good part with this kind of music or sound making. That anyone, all people, which have never played an instrument before, they can suddenly go like this on the table, you know, and stop. You really, and 10 people. I mean, so that's the beauty, or one of the beauties of it.
And mentioned the imperatives of rock music. Could you say that free improvised music and a bit more, it's a bit more free from this imperative of progression of something new, that it's sort of more timeless than the pop music, not so much dependent on
the trends and music. You mean
or not only the trends, but you know, there's the in other musical worlds, I mean, even in experimental electronics, there's the imperative that there must be something new.
I don't
see so much of that in the music that's, let's say, being played here.
No, that's true. Now I think that is, of course, it can be kind of lean back and this is the boring old same stuff. But that usually you can again, it's kind of can be a deceptive stuff that you might think it's just the old same, but it's really not. And the new thing can really, really be this the new thing. You know, remade again for the 100th of time. It's a recycled, but it's supposed to, you know, like our new consumerate stuff. This is a new iPhone, you know. Is it really? It's the same kind of phone. So it seemed to be new, but is it? So I agree with that. If it's like that, it's really good, because I think the new for its own sake, it kills us, you know. Mm-hmm. Also, like a spiritual being.
Mm, okay.
You know, we need tradition.
Okay, for the last question, could you elaborate on one thing that you think you have learned as a musician and that is a result of you being a musician that you could share with the world?
One thing?
Yeah.
That I have learned?
Yeah. That is worth sharing and that is that can be articulated?
What is that? I think it's so many things, you know, that you can. Hopefully, it can be as the yesterday concert was that kind of moment that we shared something that if you go into something, concentrate, don't pretend this is some kind of this music or the other. Don't pretend the audience dislike or like it. Just go with it, what is there. And then eventually you will see it, you know. You will hear it, you will see it. And you will do it simultaneously. The audience and there will be no division between you and the audience. It's not like they are playing things. No, it's not like that. But the situation, the moment, the experience is the same. And to find that, because I don't think you will find it if you're a musician that you want to show how good you are. Look at my virtuosic skills and blah, blah, blah. You can do this, of course, but then you put something in, or it might be that you put something in the way for the listener, which you also are. You are both a listener and the audience are also participating. And I think yesterday maybe we were able to share that they were also participating in the concert, or you were. And this, as also when I was playing on the street, I think I could somehow reach that point, you know. And then people were completely, you know, they didn't expect this music to come. And I didn't expect them to stop suddenly. And then it's something happened. And this, and the what I mean is that for these things to be able to happen in our lives now, we can't have the constant music everywhere. And the kids are kind of always games and you have to distract yourself with this or that. Because then you will not have you will not see these moments where this can happen. So maybe this is a kind of a, and this goes, I think, you know, for wherever you are in the world, in different cultural contexts. If you have this, you can have the bliss of being lucky from time to time. This is not a constant state; it just comes, you know, and then it goes away. But if you're constantly exposed to this, you will always feel some kind of discontent, I think. And this is really, for us, it's kind of an inner horror, you know. So maybe that's, instead of speaking about Iraq, I should speak maybe more about my own society, which I do think, you know, sometimes there's a reflection coming back. That was kind of, again, cryptic, but... Well, the cryptic is sometimes good, at least. And it, of course, it can only also just be bullshit, pure bullshit for 100%. Yes, that goes with the cryptic, you know. But I think there is something there, which sometimes you get so uplifted by experience this. Shit, it's possible. And it's not, no, it's not like, oh, it's a revolution coming. No, 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 it's here, now, it's possible. You just lift up the lid, oh, it's there. It's there all the time. You know? And that goes back to maybe there's some old Buddhistic or some other religious legends of how we are supposed to behave in this world, to be good to each other and at the same time be true to what's here, which is super difficult, of course.
What do you mean by true to what's here?
No, I mean, instead of, as I am, I'm as the kids also saying to me at home, you know, that I'm too angry and too kind of get annoyed by the advertisement on the TV and put this shit off, at least take the volume down. It's, I make so much problems with, it's there, whatever we think about it. And of course I hate it from all of my being, yes, but they are, should they always, my kids always hear me complaining, that what they are living with is, he's complaining again. Can someone take his volume down, you know? And that's why, you know, it's even however it is, we have to be true to it. It means that we have to somehow, yeah, and do maybe just have it, make a good joke out of it instead of being angry or very serious. You know? And I would like to be much more joking about this stuff. So maybe the next liner notes will be completely stupid and absurd, hopefully, if there will be any more.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Poslušali smo pogovor z Martinom Kühnom, nocoj v mezi pri koritu gostujočim muzičistom, ki bo tam špilal skupaj zasedbo All Included. Z Martinom pa se je pogovarjal Anže Zorman. Intervju Radija Študent.